Hey there, I'm Andrew. I'm the director of development at Deep Space Robots.
I'm Aaron. I am the director of production at Deep Space Robots.
Well, hello there. My name is Jonathan Steele. I'm the director of video here at Deep Space Robots.
I'm Rob, and I'm the founder and CEO of Deep Space Robots. Today, we're going to talk about Stranger. It's a song by Vampire Weekend on their album, Father of the Bride. I love this song. I think it's great. And I first heard it, I think it was 2019. And I don't even know where I heard it or how I found it, but it became a part of my running playlist because I thought it was a great song to run to. I don't know what qualifies a good song to run to, but that's kind of where it landed for me. And I just thought it was really cool. I like the music especially. So I was telling Aaron this, like, I'm the kind of, like, when I listen to music, like when I'm listening to a song, I 9 times out of 10 never don't know what the lyrics are, like, of the song. I have no
idea.
That's me. So to me, the lyrics are just another, it's just like another instrument essentially. And I just loved the way that the lyrics flow through the song. Like, I thought the music was really cool. It's a pretty strange, it's like kind of a strange arrangement, which I think contributes to kind of the feel I think they're probably trying to go for. I thought that was really cool. Like, there comes a point in the song, in the music, where the song literally becomes a stranger to itself because it gets super weird, like when they do the breakdown, and then it just keeps getting weirder from there. So it's,
that's interesting.
So it almost like collapses in on itself and I thought that was pretty cool. So
I love the fact that after that collapse, it doesn't just die. It just kind of grows from that and expands and kind of goes in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
One of the things that I think is interesting is it's kind of like style-wise, it spans like 50 years. You have 60s style Beach Boys kind of surf arpeggio picking.
Uh-huh.
You have 70s style drums, like that really tight drum kit where the snare is not really big or loose. It's really kind of quiet, tight. You have like 80s vocal harmonies, and then you have a sax, like a 1990s style pop saxophone that just kind of does its thing in the background.
I never thought about that.
It's like it, and I think maybe that's why it feels strange and familiar at the same time. So nothing going on there is new or different, and it all feels super familiar. It all feels kind of old hat, but to have all of those things kind of mashed together in the same song feels novel.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. I hadn't really picked up on all that. That's really good.
Have you all listened to the full album?
Oh yeah.
What do you think how this song fits into, like, is it strange even in the whole album itself, or?
I feel like when I listen to the entire album, this is one of the more normal songs.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was saying. Well, because like there's that one.
Because some of them are like really weird.
Yeah.
Really weird.
There's one of my favorites from like the full album is, let me see what it's called.
But I kind of feel like that's Vampire Weekend. Like every time I listen to an album by them, there's like 3 or 4 songs that are straight ahead pop.
Yeah.
Really cool, and not that the others aren't cool, but then you get these others that are just like art house, what is going on, very like crazy, just crazy.
Yeah,
you know,
I kind of get the feeling he throws in a couple pop hits that are sort of radio ready so that he can get some play time so that people come to the concerts so that he can play the songs he actually wants to play.
Yeah,
sounds plausible.
Like there's one on this record, Big Blue, that's just one phrase over and over and over for like 3 minutes. And I didn't, like you, Rob, I didn't realize that it was just one phrase until like, I don't know, the 6th listen through the album. And I was like, wait a second. And like at that point I was singing along and I realized about halfway through the song, I'd only sung one sentence. And I was like, wait a second.
So it's funny because I kind of come at songs from the opposite perspective where someone has to point out to me the music. I go straight to the words. And Vampire Weekend is really hard because before having this conversation, I would have classified this as a very bad song.
Really?
Because none of the words, like, I don't think the words are interesting or compelling or saying anything new. But at the same time,
I have a look of shock right now. Shock.
But like at the same time, I think there's like, I know that there's an audience of people that equally care about words that also approach songs like this and appreciate how vague they are. Cause then you can kind of like apply whatever meaning you want. Mm-hmm. Cause it seems to me, if I was like, I was going to summarize it, it's a guy that's met someone in his life that is making his fears or his uncertainty about the future quelled. And a realization that even though things are staying and going to get strange, we're still going to be okay. Which is like, on an insightful level, it's pretty neutral. But the music is like, I think that's what I'm kind of so far taking away. Is like, I've never read into even like the way that the music builds in the song or changes.
Yeah, I get the feeling that all of the songs on this album, at least lyrically, are really oblique. They're kind of, very figurative. There's not a lot that's kind of straight ahead ballad style songwriting. But I think that's fun.
Yeah, I was like, I was focusing on a couple of the, I guess you call them verses, where he's like, I used to freeze on the dance floor. I watched the icebergs from the shore, but you got the heat on, kettle screaming, don't need to freeze anymore. And it's like, he's talking about change. But I don't really, to me, the don't need to freeze anymore. And then later, or no, before that, he talks about, I used to look for an answer, but then the verse ends with like, I don't need to look anymore. Like things have changed now and his perspective has shifted. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I think that's, it may just be that simple, but I feel like maybe there's more to it. But yeah, the writing is a little bit strange.
I think Aaron's right. I think it's about a person. If you check the lyrics, he mentions someone named Kadada, which is his fiance now, or he's dating Rashida Jones, and Rashida's sister's name is Kadada. So if he's saying, you know, you ain't Kadada, I think the song is about his romantic partner, Rashida Jones. So I think it makes sense what you guys are saying, that, you know, it's a song about, it's kind of the manic pixie dream girl, you know, this this girl came along and showed me a whole new world and thawed my frozen heart. And but at the same time, like, it's a little uncomfortable. Things are just getting kind of strange.
Yeah.
Well, and there's something interesting too, because I feel like there's a lot of songs that are metaphorically rich, and it, like, you reading that line, Jonathan, like, that's a really beautiful line. I like the idea of an iceberg melting from like a kettle.
Yeah.
I feel like there's kind of more there, but something about this song, and I think it's probably intentional, that it almost moves at a rate, and the music is so central to it that it's like he doesn't really want you to like go too deep into the words. Like,
mm-hmm.
Cause there's some songs like that move slow and the words are the loudest instrument in the song. And this is not that. Like, this is very much kind of like you're trying to focus on a single corn stalk driving 80 miles an hour through Nebraska. So like,
yeah, it's like, if you compare this to like Lin-Manuel Miranda or something like that,
right?
Like, the music in something like Hamilton or Encanto is kind of beside the point. It's all about the wordplay and the lyrics and stuff.
Yeah.
But to Rob's earlier point, I think this song is really interesting because the lyrics are kind of another instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's right down there in the song.
Yeah.
Well, and I think part of the beauty of that is that if you can create lyrics that in my mind are vague enough, it's not necessarily that you're lacking depth, but you're allowing the listener to create that depth at their own level and like where they want to see it.
Even the when the song slows down, I feel like typically, like at least how I've always read that, is that's a key to the listener, that what's about to be said is important, or is kind of like adds a little bit of clarity about what's been happening. But contextually, it like shifts when that happens. And uh-huh. he goes on about like let me see if I can pull up the lyrics again. Better angels, and like it doesn't like.
I felt like at that point he kind of just ran out of words. Yeah, I think there's some stuff in there.
Yeah, it doesn't, even that part isn't trying to kind of play to song is slowing, music is fading, words are becoming the main engine now. Like it still feels like there's not really a propeller behind the words.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find it.
But no, I totally get that.
Yeah.
But I think that like I can identify with that in my own songwriting, there comes a point where you're just like, I don't really care what's said right here. Like as long, like if it feels right in the context of the music, it's like, and it kind of works with everything else. It's like, that's great.
Yeah. Well, and there's a degree to which that like, sometimes I feel like, I feel like I can sense a songwriter writing something that is so deeply personal that it doesn't make sense to a listener, but it makes a whole lot of sense to the writer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's not about, I don't care if anybody gets what I'm saying. I have to say this to get it off my chest in this song. And sometimes I wonder if like, I don't know if that song is an example of this, of Stranger, but sometimes I feel like that's the case where it's just like, they know what they're talking about and I have no idea, but that's okay. I feel like I'm on this journey with them anyway.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling that those are woven all throughout this record. I've heard an interview for one of these songs and Harmony Hall, and like the amount of subtext in that song is huge. And some of it's like very personal and some of it's universal. So I feel like that's kind of the universe in which the guy's writing the songs on this album, for sure.
It's musical vague booking.
Well, and I think I feel like music is the world of emotion in my, like a lot of that, like the way that I view it a lot of times, where it's the, how does, like, what is your, what do you feel? What does it draw out of you? You know, like, and if, and the song itself is a vehicle for that more than like, what's the point? You know, mm-hmm. It's like the point is it sometimes the point is just the feeling and just the emotion that you derive from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that this entire album does really well is it stays away from being preachy. Like it stays away from having lyrics that are, explicit, not in the profane sense, but like this can only be and should only be interpreted in one way, and here's the way you should interpret it, and this is what it means, and I want you to change the way that you think because of it. You know, it never gets into that territory.
You know, it's funny, I feel like he even like adamantly throws that to the wind, where he's like, who knows the reason that kindness lost its hold? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not gonna tell you. Yeah.
But it sure did.
It happened.
So, okay. So here's the segue. Rob, you said that this song, you first heard in 2019. in my mind, everything about this song is prophetic of 2020 and 2021. Mm-hmm. Like, there is not one lyric, there's not one verse of this song that doesn't have some prescience, like going forward into the future for the pandemic and the social unrest and all the crap that happened the year after this thing was released.
Totally.
What are your thoughts around that?
Well, I think there's a, I think you're totally right. And I remember you been, like, I remember, I think playing the song for you a long time ago, and you mentioned that, and I hadn't thought about it in that light before, but then I went back and, like, as I re-listened to it, I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. I think the way that he handles that is really cool. Like, there almost becomes this sort of sense of familiarity in change, where he has this sort of like he's talking about like being a stranger and like not knowing, and there's sort of like this, you know, like who knows, you know, like kindness lost its hold, who, you know, like, and there's all of this, it feels like, you know, there, it feels like he's, and even lyrically, like he's living as a stranger, but musically you have this familiarity that lives in that. And so you become comfortable with it. You almost like become comfortable with having to adapt to these changes and these differences and things that you never would have expected. And you constantly find yourself a stranger to, but you begin to live in familiarity with that. And there's a sense of comfort in it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think now they're kind of moving on to the obvious prophetic connections this song has to 2020. I feel like going back to those same verses, I don't know if this was his, obviously he couldn't have intended to write this about the pandemic, but this is still kind of a phenomenon that people could have experienced before. But like when he talks about, you know, I used to freeze in the dance floor, and then he's like, but I don't need to freeze anymore. I think for many people, myself included, one thing that 2020 unveiled was that we had a lot of assumptions about how things had to be. And we thought, I have to be this way. I have to work this way. I have to interact with people this way. I have to be confined to certain things. And 2020 was like, you know what? Let's rethink all of that. Like, and I think I've actually come out of that, not making as many assumptions as I used to, about how things ought to be or how I should be.
Yeah, and I like how he talks about, like, he almost talks about, like, I remember life as a stranger, where he's saying that he remembers what it was like to be what it was like to feel that sense of unfamiliarity with the unknown, and that, and but now it's like he's so accustomed to it that he doesn't, you know, he's talking in the third person of like, I remember what that felt like, you know, but now I know that, like, things change. So,
yeah, I think the wordplay there is really fun, because the song kind of goes through, like you said, remembering back to a time where, you know, he was not with somebody, he was alone. He felt like a stranger. Now he is with somebody, he's together. You know, he has this kind of communion, this being home, but things are getting stranger. So, you know, before he was a stranger, he was estranged, he was wandering. Now he's with somebody, but things just feel kind of a little bit strange.
I like that.
And yeah. I think that, I don't know, being quarantined and sheltering in place with even people that you know and love for an extended period of time, like only ever seeing their face and no one else, like, that is kind of a, you know, it's a wonderful kind of homey feeling, but it's a little weird. It's pretty strange.
Yeah. Well, and then that causes when you finally got the chance to break out of that and go somewhere again, suddenly that became strange a little bit, where it's like, yeah, the familiar, the normal is now also strange. It was strange to be locked in here, and now it's strange to go out. And so it's like, yeah, there's just strangeness everywhere.
One of my favorite books is Nausea by John Paul Sartre. There's the kind of the heart of the book is him staring at a tree and becoming nauseous at the tree because he's, after staring at it long enough, he kind of loses the edges of the thing he's looking at and doesn't really see anything other than the fact that it exists, like that it's a being, that it's the same kind of substance as him at like a deep down level, having his entire existence kind of inverted to where even like the roots kind of popping out of the ground makes him feel nauseous. Like, I think he took peyote and looked at a tree before he we talked about that. Like, there's a little bit more involved in how he got to that the point. The feeling I get listening to the song is a general discomfort, I think, the whole way through. It's funny because it sounds like it would be a happy song because the music is very upbeat and it moves pretty quick. But at least for me, I kind of leave the song feeling very uneasy and almost a little bit nauseous. Like, again, the metaphor of driving 80 miles an hour and trying to like hold your eye on a stalk of corn and the feeling of like your head doing whiplash and the edges of the whole field kind of blending together and becoming one object. And so you listen to the song and then you walk out of it and you feel like you don't really know what you got or what the point of it was, or was it a happy song? Was it a neutral song? Like, there's no way to really like kind of like put a definitive border around what this thing is.
I know.
It makes you feel nauseous.
I was going to say, that's part of what I love about it.
Yeah.
Is that there's no way to like, you can't be boxed in.
Maybe that's like the difference between. Well, that's a great. Totally. I don't even feel like nauseous. What were you going to say?
Oh, I love that. I think it's so funny. Y'all go so deep.
Well, that's why this song at first blush was one of my least favorite on the album. The words don't let you necessarily go there automatically, and you have to rely on the music, and the music is disconcerting. And so my favorite has always been either Harmony Hall, which is very much like Andrew was saying, like the words are just several layers deep in symbolism, and then the music is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was Rich Man, which is the silly, like happy, almost like 1880s wedding and still life. And then this one is one that I've always like associated with like 2020 or,
you know, it's funny you say the music is disconcerting because it, not listening to the lyrics on a deeper level when I first heard the song a couple times, I feel like it's almost one step short of happy-go-lucky. Like, it feels positive to me. It doesn't feel like, oh no, something's wrong. And then you start listening and it's more, oh man, like he's actually like at a crossroads or he's realizing something less than great about the reality.
Well, it feels like it starts to unravel. It's almost like it starts really tight and it makes a lot of sense. And then it just sort of like becomes this sort of unraveling of that. And
the music or the lyrics or both?
Both.
I think both. Yeah, because like it's kind of a bop. It's kind of a bop. You know, it's kind of a party pop song. And then like, the second verse, there's like this screaming sax that comes out of nowhere, and you're like,
we're going there. We went there.
You know what it reminds me of? It's the it's that one Be Creative. What was the YouTube video from a while ago where it's like it starts off as this like happy kid show about like, you're not thinking creatively, you need to like be creative. And then do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
The video just escalates and escalates until it's a horror show. Like the end of the video, it goes progressively more and more dark.
What's that? The Forest Critters kids cartoon on YouTube? No.
Happy Tree Friends.
Happy Tree Friends is like that, where it's like, it's really happy and innocent. For anyone listening to don't go watch it because it's like, it's all happy and bright and colorful and everyone's like, la, 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 la. And then it ends in like horrific bloody violence every time. So yeah.
That's awesome.
It's like that.
No, but Jonathan, so I, mean, I, I see your point for sure that like it starts out like a happy pop song for sure.
Well, and so actually, not to continue to push this point, but I feel like even like at the 3.5 minute mark, if you play just for a second, it's still pretty peppy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It definitely breaks away from the conventions of like verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, you know, and like the what every other song is. But I don't know if it like becomes.
I don't think it goes dark.
Worrisome. Yeah, it doesn't go dark.
I wouldn't call it worrisome or dark, but I would call it it becomes strange. Mm-hmm. Like it's strange.
Sure. Okay. I'll give you that one. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's changes. Not. I would not put it in like a. Like I wouldn't put this song in like a dark category, like where I would say like you know, like kind of like there's. No hope and, you know, blah, 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 and all that. I don't think I would put that this song there.
I will say that like the lyrics end and then the song just kind of peters off into nothingness for like the next 30 seconds at least, I think. Yeah. It's just kind of like, yeah.
Well, and that's another like vintage musical move because I haven't heard a long fade out like that in popular music. It's certainly not common now like it was in the 80s or 70s.
Oh, I think you're totally right about that. Like that's very, very much like a jam 70s jam band.
Yeah. Kind of like Creedence Clearwater Revival or Fish or something like that.
That kind of vibe, for sure. Or you'd have
you get the sense someone forgot to hit like the stop button on the recording.
Yeah, they just kept the recording going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's just fun. They're having too much fun.
I think that's the implication. It's like the implication is this band kept playing for hours. You just happened to hear this 4 minutes of it.
That's a good way of putting it. It was a jam session. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I actually have a funny story about this album because I got it the week that I started contracting for Deep Space Robots.
Oh, wow.
And, listened to it on a loop for all of September and October.
No so way.
I have very strong memories of fall of 2019 with this album, working that first contract with you guys. So it's cemented in my mind.
How can you still listen to it?
Well, no, I'm honestly, just that was a great experience.
No, I know.
Experience, but
do you imagine yourself at a wedding venue?
Perhaps at a dentist.
Because
so I mean, the album is called Father of the Bride. So
that's true. It was called Father of the Bride, and we that's were doing amazing. Wedding websites. That's awesome.
Yep.
So can I share something that I feel like this song another side of it. So I think music too for me there's very much a spiritual element to it where I feel like it's a way where we kind of. Can experience God in our daily life. And I think part of this song, like I felt like, I honestly feel like kind of speaks to me in that way where, you know, I feel like, and maybe even as we've been talking about the progression of it, you know, the progression of the song and sometimes it makes you feel nauseous and there's different things to kind of go back and forth. But like, just the idea of like, you know, I remember life as a stranger. Now I'm looking back at my life as like what that was as a stranger, or it's like being known and found in the Lord, like that's changed my identity of like what it means to be a stranger, and what it means to be what it mean. And that has consequently shifted focus of like what strangeness really looks like. And so usually, I mean, a lot of times when I listen to songs, I feel like there's usually this sort of spiritual component that's just a part of it where and it can be even in like some 80s metal band, they probably had zero, when they were writing it, had zero context for, oh yeah, we're going to like totally, you know, make this a spiritual thing. So I'm not saying it's necessarily even in his, what he would have wanted as a songwriter out of it. But usually in my take on it, I feel like you can kind of see God in just the music that we create as humans. And so I think, I don't know. I think that's part of what, part of, I think one of the reasons why I like it is that sort of it reminds me of the uncomfortableness and yet familiarity that I feel like in Christ. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's this sort of like, there's a sense of familiarity in this insanity of like, you don't necessarily know what the future holds. And I don't know, you know, like life seems strange on so many levels in so many different ways. But at the end of the day, I know like who holds life, and I know, and that's, that becomes a comfort in a way in the middle of strangeness. And I feel like that, I feel like the song spoke to that for me.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say that's not, I agree with you, Rob, and I don't think that that's grasping at straws. I think, you know, Pascal has his God-shaped hole theory. And I think that's true. Like every human has a longing in their heart for God and for relationship, a right relationship. Aaron and I were talking earlier this week. Solomon says it in Ecclesiastes. He has put eternity in our hearts, yet so that we cannot tell the end from the beginning. So there's something inside of every person that kind of has that longing to understand, that longing for spiritual relationship and fulfillment. And so even if it's not explicit in their lyrics, it's something that is baked into every person and is going to leak through somehow.
Well, this is probably a subject for another podcast, but I even see it in the very fabric of what we express and discuss as humans, like how we experience life is you know, in him, we live and move and have our being. So in our very interactions with each other and like in our, in the relationship that, you know, that this guy writes about, like the very nature of that relationship is a reflection of a greater reality that lives around us, whether we acknowledge it or not. And so I think that's part of why I think you really can't be necessarily accused of over spiritualizing a song, maybe.
You know, I love that you used that verse, in him we live and move and have our being, because that's not from the Bible. That's Greek poetry that Paul leveraged to prove that we're all sons of gods to the Athenians.
So yes, but it was still really, in the Bible. Still
you
made
really
it
proved scripture. Your point there.
But scripture as quoted from another reference, which that's,
yep,
again,
yep,
another podcast.
All right, now I have a question.
Yep.
Maybe you guys can expound on this, because I'm not, I can't read this line as anything other than a scene from a horror movie. And it's at the very beginning. Another night indoors, another sign of life wobbling up through the floor. What in the heck is that? I'm leaving.
Does this get to kind of Aaron's point of this being really unsettling?
There's not really a way that you can read that that's comforting.
Well, and what's worse is he starts everything off with that. I mean, there's the chorus first, and then it's like, hey, let's start with signs of life wobbling up through the floor, and then we'll talk about how things are strange. And it's like, oh, wait. It's just, okay.
You want my 2020 take on this?
Oh my gosh, tell me.
Okay, so this is exactly my experience, because we had neighbors downstairs that loved to play like bossa nova kind of Latin pop, really loud. And so we would literally have sound, literally have sound wobbling up through the floor. And it was a sign of life for the people in the apartment under us. But like, man, it was like four nights a week. We would be eating
oh
dinner
my
and
gosh,
then we'd hear, doom, ga-doom, 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 for like an hour. And then it would go quiet. And like honestly, it was a little annoying. But then I thought, you know what? They're stuck inside just like everybody else.
Okay,
they only do it for an hour at a time. It's fine.
Yeah,
just let them do their thing.
Could be worse than bossa nova.
That's true.
For the sure. Lyricists in the room, was that reference a positive reference or a negative reference of a song wobbling up through the floor? Because I can't.
But that, like, that's the
negative
thing.
To me.
Like, if you're really feeling alone, like if you're really feeling isolated, it might actually be comforting to know that there's actually a person, you know, 12 feet below you, even if they're doing something a little bit annoying, even if it's a little bit strange. Like, it might be a little comforting to know that there's someone there. But at the same time,
so I'll say this: that only works when you live on the second or above story of anything.
I think
most floors
right now.
Well, when you said that, my first thought was, what kind of life are we talking about? I can think of many life forms that I would not want wobbling through. like what Jonathan just said, of if you live on the first floor, you do not want any kind of life wobbling up.
That's fair. That is fair.
We need to get a sign in our office, no wobbling. Like,
so this is an extremely dark turn. But literally the way my first thought when I heard that line is the scene in the German Nazi that's hunting Jews.
Is that
Inglourious,
a movie?
Inglourious Bastards.
Oh yeah.
I haven't seen that, but
he's sitting in a chair, and beneath him he's interrogating somebody he thinks is hiding a family of Jews, and they're in a cellar underneath the floor looking up as he's like interrogating the homeowner that's hiding them underneath the table. To me, that might just be an association in my brain, but that's why like that line feels really eerie, because wobbling and life forms underneath the floor doesn't feel like a normal thing that you wake up and you're like, oh yeah, the life forms under my floor are wobbling.
Not again.
Life forms.
Yeah. See, I kind of like, and then on my side, I'm just envisioning a little flower that kind of comes up through the floor.
Mickey and the Beanstalk.
Like Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, hey, sweet meat, bro.
What's your take, Jonathan?
I was going to say, I think we could do an entire podcast on those two answers, right? The Jews in the cellar and the dancing plant. Like,
we're now ready to introduce our new podcast, Analyze This.
Analyze this, you jack wagon. You know, for my personal experience and connections and all that, I think I'm going to stick with cockroaches. Just keep it simple.
Oh, man. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Because that happens. Sure. We don't have a cockroach issue, but once in a while it'll rain and just a big old fat one will wobble up from the floor. And in my case, we live in a pier and beam house, which is very odd for Texas, and so we actually have space underneath our house, so gonna have great dreams about that tonight. But when we got this house inspected, the guy was like, whoever like termite proofed this house in the 60s did an amazing job, like nothing's getting up through here. So that was comforting.
Awesome.
So no wobbling in this house, at least not usually.
So we're going to use wobble as our frame of reference. 10 wobbles obviously would be the worst, because we don't want anything wobbling up through the floor. So the more something has wobbled through the floor, the worse it is. So 10 wobbles is the worst possible wobble. And 0 wobbles is obviously the best, because we've all mostly agreed, even if you don't go with my analogy of the dancing flower, that you don't want any wobbles. So 0 wobbles would be the best possible song.
Minimum wobblage.
Minimum wobblage.
That's
awesome. So what's your wobble score for Vampire Weekend's Stranger?
My wobble score is officially a 2.5 wobble.
Awesome. Aaron?
It's less preferable than neutral. So that would put it like a 6.5.
That's like a 6, yeah. 6 or a 7. Yeah.
6.5.
Let's give it a 6.5. Yeah.
Beautiful. Andrew, how about you?
Yeah, I give it a 4 or 3. Let's say 3.5 wobbles for me. I really like this song.
Man, I don't know. I feel like maybe I like it more than the rest of y'all do, because I think I might give it a 2.
Oh, just
because it's so mellow. And I think for me personally, I gravitate towards really mellow music. Music that feels calming as long as you don't pay attention to the wobbles. and this song feels that way to me. It felt, because until I started listening to the words, it was like, this is kind of like, I can like put this on and get to work and like feel calmed and focused. And I really enjoy it. It's on my liked songs list now. And I think I'd give it a 2. I really do.
Awesome.
The only reason I didn't give it a lower wobble score is because there's a lot of phenomenal songs out there, and I want to give room for those.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
True. True. Yeah. See, I'm not thinking that far ahead. I'm living in the moment, man.
Very good. Awesome. Okay. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I think this podcast got stranger.
Hey,
that's the truth.
That was good.
Things have never been stranger. Things are gonna stay strange. I remember life as a stranger. But things change. Things are gonna stay strange.